Pacific greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Pacific Australia Youth Association's podcast. This is Paya's very first episode, and it's really great to have you joining from across the Pacific region. Thanks so much for joining in, and we're looking forward to sharing stories of Pacifica leaders and young people across Brisbane, where we're hosting this recording from. Thanks to Pacifica TV and Radio for having us in their studio and allowing us to use this beautiful venue to bring you stories and inspiration from across our region. I'm going to pass over to my co-host, Anne Clan, to introduce our guest.
Hi, everyone. Let's jump in. Sorry, I just cut Dom in. Not good. Hello, everyone. I am Anne Clan, and I am also sitting here beside the one and only Sui. But he actually is going to tell us his full name, because I did ask him just then before and I wanted to do it appropriately.
Cool. Greetings and salutations. My name is Suli, also known as Lava Iloaola, and I'm very honoured to be on the show today.
Amazing. Does your name mean anything, by the way?
It means... it's kind of three words, I guess you could summarise, as someone who brings and shares knowledge.
Wow.
And shares stories.
And that's exactly what he will be doing today.
Hopefully.
We don't have a real agenda or run sheet, so we're just going with the flow. Bit of a conversational style today. And Suli, you are a very well-known leader here in Queensland, Tonga and the Pacific. Can you share a little bit about, I guess, your personal story? You probably shared it a lot of times, but for our audience and for our episodes today, can you kind of dive into... Sure. Who you are and your background.
Absolutely. Look, thanks for the opportunity. First and foremost, I'll just start by giving glory to God for his presence with us here today. I also want to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land for where our studio stands, which is on Jagera and Turrbal people's land, and also acknowledge our First Nations people right up to the Torres Strait and across this whole continent of Australia, our elders across the Pacific, both here in Australia but also across the region, and amazing hosts of Paya who are here with us today, Dominique, as well as Anne Clan. So great to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to come in and to share a little bit today. Once upon a time, as they say, the story would begin, but I might just share a little bit about, I guess, from a perspective of broadcasting and from Pacific broadcasting from a youth perspective. So I was born in Brisbane. I've been raised in different places across the region. I'm a citizen of Tonga, a citizen of Australia, so a dual citizen, and moving in that in a lot of our Pacific communities, particularly in our Tongan, Samoan, and also our Māori communities is where I kind of spent a lot of my time growing up, and have lived across Tonga, American Samoa, Nauru, PNG, New Zealand, and here in Australia. So I came back to Australia in 2009, and since then I've done time in PNG and Nauru. Just coming back to Australia, going back to the late 1990s, I saw that there was a gap in my view, and it's both a generational gap, but also just a gap in terms of opportunities for Pacific youth broadcasting. At the time, I'd been a volunteer since 1992 through to for over 20 to 30 years at Radio 4UB FM, which is an ethnic broadcasting station here in Brisbane. I was a volunteer with our Tongan program, but at the time, I felt that our broadcasters were playing all the old music for the old guard. Nothing wrong with that. I love the classics, mm-hmm. but it just wasn't a platform for our youth. And I went through a two-year, I wouldn't say battle, I'll say advocacy with the board of directors to get an opportunity to build a youth program for Pacific youth on Radio 4UB. After lots of advocacy, we had some auditions, we got a team together of different Pacific backgrounds and created a program called Pacific Wave. It was the first Pacific Island youth radio show in Australia. It ran for 20-odd years, I think it was almost 20 years. I was overseas. Other people took it over and kept moving it forward. But what it did do was create a platform for our younger people. And that's something I see that Paya is doing, is you're creating a voice in this current time for our youth, because this is the next generation that needs to move through the ranks. Fast forward to Pacifica TV and Radio. We've moved a lot away from radio and traditional television, consumption of news and information, particularly here in Australia. Also print media. I grew up getting the Tongan Koloni Kari Tonga, the Tonga Chronicle, posted by mail to me. Took about 2 weeks. We'd read it out on the radio station here in Brisbane, and it's like it's old news, right? But technology now is real time, and so this brings us to podcasting and kind of what effectively Pacifica TV Radio is a podcaster. So it was always part of our plan. It was to create a podcasting platform for our Pacific Island diaspora communities, but with an outreach and connection into the Pacific Islands. And so we decided to launch in June 2020. Now, as you both know, that was the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. We were told by everybody, that is the worst time to launch. I said, I disagree. I think this is the best time to launch. And it was the best time.
Yeah.
So at the time we had lockdowns here in Brisbane and we did a had a marquee out in the backyard here. I think the limitation was like at the time 50 people max. We had over 200 people who wanted to be part of our launch. So we literally had people arriving and going on a schedule to not ensure we stayed within our quota at the time and not attract the attention of the authorities. We had Her Royal Highness Princess Angelica Latifuipeka Tuku'aho, who's one of our Tongan royal family members, online on Zoom from Canberra. Again, this is lockdown period, and she did an official speech to launch the program. We had reverends online and in person coming and doing prayers and blessings and this kind of thing. But what it did do, when we had our Pacific people in lockdowns, particularly in Melbourne, Victoria, America, New Zealand, and around the world, it broke that silence. It broke that pause where people were disconnected physically. There was a time when people couldn't go to funerals, people couldn't go to birthdays, we couldn't travel, our borders were closed. But yet, through technology, we were able to use technology to our advantage and connect people, no matter how isolated they felt. And we saw it became a bit of an outlet. People were calling in, doing videoing in or phoning in by phone. They were able to ask for songs and dedications on different programs, and people just had an outlet to communicate and feel connected to family and friends. The other thing was people overseas were able to bring people through Zoom online. And it culminated when we had the Hunga Tonga Hunga Pai volcanic eruption in Tonga, when Tonga was literally, the internet was cut and there was no communication with Tonga. Our other shows were gracious enough to give all their airtime to the Tongan program. We ran non-stop 24 hours for 14 days from the time of just before the volcanic eruption, but when there were rumblings, right through to when connection was restored with Tonga. We were the first broadcaster to connect directly to the newsroom in Tonga because our sponsor Digicel gave us the heads up that the phone lines were about to be connected in less than 10 minutes, and we had a one-hour bulletin from Tonga with all that we'd missed out on and so forth. We got strong relationships with government partners as well, and also with the ABC, which enabled us to, I guess, drip feed the little bit of information we were receiving at the time and share it with the community. During those 2 weeks, we had all the major television networks in Australia, including BBC, Al Jazeera, and overseas networks, camping outside the studio in our backyard here, just coming and wanting to hear any update, talk to the presenters, get a feel for what people were saying. We had a lot of seasonal workers that were calling in and crying because they didn't know if their mum or their dad or their family were alive just after the volcanic eruption. But I just share this one example of where the power of media, the power of connection, the power of podcasting can bring people together. I'll stop there because your airtime will run out.
Yeah, that's amazing. You mentioned, Sally, it's just amazing to hear the legacy that Pacifica TV and Radio is building, even as a new platform, 5 years old. You mentioned growing up in Brisbane and being Australian Tongan. Can you share a little bit about your personal journey, connecting with the Pacific, and how you became Tongan?
I think the biggest challenge, particularly here in Australia, is we have a very well in Queensland. We growing up, we had a very small Pacific diaspora here in Brisbane. One thing my parents, who have business links and so forth back to the kingdom, had always encouraged me to do from a young age was with older people, with elders, not to speak to them in English. And I know it's so easy just to sit because everyone is bilingual, particularly here in Australia, but I was challenged and told by my parents, always use language, always use language. And then when I started to learn a few other island languages and all that, I kind of adopted the same thing. I just challenged myself, disciplined myself not to use English. So I think that's an advantage in a sense. I hung around a lot of the older people in the community. So a lot of my friends were sort of aged 50 above. But they were the custodians of knowledge, right? And so they tell their stories, and I could see younger people in my age group just rolling their eyes, bored, not interested. But I would just zoomed in, I'm like, oh, that's cool, tell me more, and ask more questions. And I guess I was able to have them download a lot of information. And I'm not saying I'm a professor or guru of everything that's been shared, but certainly I did a lot of growing in those years, learning information from these people that have brought their knowledge over here. And I think there was a bit of a divide. Young people who were born here kind of felt like, we know how the world runs. We're from we were born in Australia, and almost like they had an upper hand on their parents. I look at it the other way. I was like, no. You've got knowledge, you've got skills from the islands that this generation probably could not even replicate, including just the village life and survival skills and cooking skills and traditional skills and so forth. So that's something through the Queensland Tongan Language School, which is another project we have on the side. We've tried to teach things like weaving, traditional knowledge, understanding understanding the kava ceremony. What is it? What's the role? So I guess growing up, it's leveraging off our elders and then utilizing that and then sharing that knowledge with the next generation.
That's beautiful. And even you talking about how you saw the gap between youth, like just the youth needing the more power and attention to that. And I'm wondering if you have a story behind this, that there was a moment in your life as a youth kid that you were like, I want to be heard, I want to see this.
I will tell you a story, and I've never told this story on air, but a few people who know me closely, I was you know, growing up, my Tongan was not at the broadcasting level. So in Tonga, the broadcasting level is Tonga has three tiers of language. We have a royal language for the king, a language for nobles, and a language for common people. The radio uses a mixture of commoners' language but also nobles' language, a lot of very deep phrases and that kind of thing. And I was accomplished in the, you know, commoner language, but it was trying to learn those really more respectful, chiefly honoraric language on radio. So, you know, I did the best I could. And then there was the lady who founded our Radio 4UB Tongan program, bless her soul, she's still alive and a very good family friend of ours. She's in her 90s now. And we had an AGM meeting and she said, well, I've been listening to Sulieni's Tongan and it's not quite at the radio standard. So I'd like to propose that he doesn't speak on air anymore.
No,
he can do the technical side and behind the scenes, but we need someone who can speak the proper oratory language on air. I was cut, eh?
Oh, I was so cut.
I mean, I went home and I was like, that's it, I'm leaving, I'm quitting, I'm not doing broadcasting and all that. But I did a bit of soul searching about it and I thought, you know what, I'm going to prove her wrong.
I love that. How old were you at that
time? I was 13.
Wow.
And I proved her wrong. So this is back before email. So I wrote to some friends back in Tonga. I said, could you guys get me like a dictionary, like a Tongan dictionary, like with all the old words? And so someone did. Took a few months. They sent me through a dictionary. Mm-hmm. And I would sit there and just like that with the Bible, the English and Tongan Bible, and just go through and like try and learn all these really old words. I mean, I couldn't tune into the radio over there from here. Like, it's different now, but back then it's quite isolated here. And so thing, and so I just kept challenging myself. I kept practicing and practicing and practicing, and then I'd write to the radio in Tonga and say, "Can you guys send me some scripts and stuff like that?" I practice reading these like funeral notices with all the deep poetic language and metaphors and that kind of thing. And you know, slowly by slowly, practice makes perfect. And then gradually, I got the chance to speak a bit more on air. And then years later, the same lady was at the similar meeting and was actually criticizing others in the group. Your grammar's not up to standard. You said this on air and it's not right. Now that you guys need to speak like Sulieni. His Tongan is perfect on air. And I was like, yes. I made it. I got the tick, you know. So, you know, I think when you on a learning, a journey of learning language, you've got to be prepared to make mistakes.
Mm.
Make mistakes. Yeah, you'll be embarrassed. You'll say the wrong thing. But that's how you learn, right?
Yeah.
And then from that comes growth. And then from there, you just keep moving forward. Never look backward.
That is so cool. Mm. You at 13 is pretty impressive.
I mean, it must be similar in PNG, you know, with such diverse the amount of languages spoken in PNG, the most linguistically diverse country in the world. But you communicate through talk pisin amongst people from different provinces, like you have that common connection, but then underneath it there's so much depth of culture and language.
I actually had a story where I was at the airport. And this lady didn't know talk pisin actually, and she was speaking in Tari, which is another dialect that they have, and she wanted to do a call, and I didn't understand what she was saying, so I'm like sitting here looking at her like, oh no, like, and I'm speaking in talk pisin, and she's like, nope, I don't understand you. And I'm like, okay, here, have my phone. And the power of language is very like amazing, incredible. And even just the thought of how you have three different levels, I didn't know that about that in Tonga, to be honest. That was like, whoa.
I think we live in a global age right now where, like, English is very dominant, you know, French, Chinese, you know, Spanish, Portuguese, a lot of key languages. But our languages, like, there are several languages in the Pacific which are either endangered on the endangered list or, you know, or have been lost altogether. I mean, you know, there are dialects in Tonga which have been lost. The island of Niue Tuktapu has lost its language. Niue Fo'ou, there's a Renaissance revival of their language. The rest of Tonga speaks its own language. But, you know, there's smaller places that have lost their language. I know there's a revival with Rotuman language right now as well. And trying to retain it. And I think that's really important that we need to use our languages. I think that's the other thing. And things like communication on air, print, we need to read, write, speak, and listen in our languages, or we'll lose it, or this next generation will lose it. With that, though, language evolves. I get that with technology and new terms, but we need to be proactive. I just got back from Norfolk Island last week where there's a group of advocates over there and supporters trying to, teach and support the retention of Norfolk Island language. And they've actually signed they've formed a Norfolk Island Language Commission over there, and they have signed a document in 2023, I think it is, with the local school over there, that the school will make all efforts to bring in language and cultural custodians into the school to work alongside teachers to retain their language, because language is connects to our identity.
Yes, yes.
And something I've heard a lot in Brisbane with younger Pacific youth that I've worked with over the years has been the struggle of walking in two worlds,
mm-hmm.
the Western world and the island world, but for some of the ones born here, second, third generation, it's not really, they want to understand more of their island world. So it's been a privilege to be part of some cultural programs in Brisbane. There are a lot out there right now where they're actually teaching some of the traditional, say, Samoan customs or Tongan or Fijian, whatever it might be, kind of thing, so that our younger people can connect to their identity, which then makes them stand prouder and stand taller and more confident walking in the world of Australia, which in itself is a multicultural society.
Yes. Do you have children? Right?
Three kids, yes.
Three kids. And are you teaching your kids
Tongan?
Tongan?
Yes,
yeah.
All three of our kids, we can speak to them in Tongan, they understand. Speaking back is so-so, which was a bit of a driver for us starting the Queensland Tongan Language School. We felt if you're not going to pick it up organically, then perhaps if we teach it in sort of a classroom setting, that would help, and it has. And we've had a lot of people come to the school, including our adults that are of Tongan heritage, but whatever, they were part of a generation in New Zealand or Australia that missed out on the language, and they're in some cases very embarrassed about it, and they're very discreet when they write to us. Some of them don't want to be in a class, they want to be one-on-one, they're just a bit nervous about, you know, but once they start that journey, you see those light bulb moments, and the journey of 12 months in the language is to get them to a point they can stand up at, say, a funeral or a wedding and make a basic speech, even just the introductions, and know what's going on, the protocols of the room. You know, our Pacific culture has a lot of protocols, and if you understand those protocols, you have a confidence to not only understand but also to navigate them and apply them appropriately.
I'm very curious now. So as a parent who are raising your kids in Western world, I guess, here in Australia, and then you also want to install into them the culture, language, and so on, is there any part of you that worries about the influences and things that are outside of your control, I guess, within the way that you raise them, that they'll be out in Australia and in the Western world, I guess? Like,
I think every parent has those concerns. I think every parent has those sort of concerns, but I think if we give them the foundational knowledge, at the end of the day, kids will make their own choices. Mm-hmm. They'll make their own decisions. They'll develop and come out as their own people at the end of the line. I think for them, we've said to them a lot, when we go to, I'll use funeral as an example, go to a funeral, or a few weeks ago, we went to a Tongan engagement, and we took them along to the engagement. I said, I want you, they didn't want to come. I said, oh, we'll stay home, we'll play computer games. What I said, no, I want you to come. They go, oh, but we're not connected. We weren't related to the couple getting engaged. I said, no, I want you to come in, I want you to watch. I want you to watch, I want you to observe, and I want you to ask me questions afterwards, or ask mum questions of what you saw and all that. And there was certain cultural presentation. My daughter came back and said, oh, mum, I want to have a Tongan wedding. I want to do a Tongan engagement, because there was pigs, there was cans of corned beef, there was quilts, there was mats, there was a whole, you know, range of things, kind of thing. But then we were sort of explaining to her, well, you wouldn't be giving that. A guy would be giving that to you, because it was the guy giving it to the girl as part of the asking for her hand in marriage. But she seemed quite excited by it. She didn't even want to go. And now look, and now you're quite interested about it. But as long as they can sort of see it and understand it. And I always say with funerals, I said, one day mum and dad will pass away. You know, you need to know how to navigate. So when on our parents on either side and grandparents, when they passed away, we said, watch and observe. And we've explained how things happen. Because one day it'll be our turn. We won't be here. You need to know what to do. You need to know who to go to and what their role is and so forth. We want them to be confident. I have seen kids raised overseas who've gone to funerals, particularly mixed race and so forth, and they've just not knowing what to do. They look lost, and I really feel for them. And they've had to ask people, what is this about? What's that about? Or where family not stepping up to culture, where you've got these cousins here who know what to do, and then those cousins there are just completely not aware of what to do. And then there's been a bit of a clash, a cross-cultural clash. Mm. And if everyone knew what to do, the village pulls together and knows their role. We all need to know our role, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't know your role, then people will talk about you. You didn't do your, you know, your role, your function, but you may not know what your function was.
Yeah.
So that's part of it too.
I just wanted to go back to the language learning, because it's fascinating as a language learner myself, like learning French and Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese. I read on the Australian High Commission page in Tonga about a little bit about your story and how you were connected with, was it pilots? at some point and expose you to learning Tongan.
Yes.
Would you be able to touch a little bit on that?
Yes, absolutely.
It's really fascinating.
So my parents both met in the airline industry in the 1960s, and then when you get married, back in those days, you couldn't flight attendant, so females, my mum in this case, you could no longer be flying anymore. So that was the time you had to leave, because a woman's role was to be at home with her children and not flying around the countryside and overseas. Ironically, my mum worked in Papua New Guinea. This was pre-independence, pre-1975, obviously 60s. My mum was a flight attendant on what they called the Bird of Paradise flights, because TAA was responsible for domestic and, you know, international between Australia and PNG. Spent a lot of time in Port Moresby and Leh and Madang and all these places. Loved her time in Papua New Guinea, loved it to a T. But yeah, got married, so they had to leave, and then Dad didn't want to be flying around, so they started a flying school here in Brisbane at Archerfield Airport. And they had a mixture. The clientele was mostly farmers from out west who wanted to learn how to fly crop dusters, and then the other half were international students, and most of them were from Papua New Guinea, Vanuatu, Tonga, New Zealand. Back then, it was cheaper for a New Zealander to come to Australia, pay accommodation, live here, learn to fly, than to do it in their own country. Mm-hmm. That's all changed now. So we had a AusAid-funded program, what was called ADAB back then, where the Australian government funded for the first ever Indigenous Tongan pilots to learn to fly for Tonga, including the first female Tongan pilot to fly for Tonga's national flag carrier, Royal Tongan Airlines. And so began our affiliation with Tonga when I was a very, very young boy, and also the rest of the Pacific as well through aviation. So,
so cool.
Yeah, trained a lot of pilots who, you know, went on to Air New Guinea, Air Vanuatu, all of those airlines. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Cool.
And at the moment, you are the talking chief. Is that correct?
Correct. For His Majesty, King Tebalda VI. Yeah, so a couple of years back, Tonga High Commission came to Brisbane. They asked me to have a meeting, and they told me I can bring my wife, but can't bring anyone else to the meeting. And normally we always get together with our committee, and I thought, that's a bit odd. Mm. And I said to my wife, I said, I hope they're not going to take my Tongan passport off me. What's going on here? This is a bit weird. But I went out to the airport, and they said that we're here to personally deliver a letter to you. His Majesty, King Tebalda VI, wants to install you as his talking chief in Australia with a matapule, or a chiefly title, which is the Lava Iloola title.
Yeah.
I was just sitting in silence, I didn't know what to say. I was just so shocked and all of that. And then they said, so as you know, you're going to have to go to Tonga. It'll be a kava ceremony and all of that. Then COVID hit. And then so no travel, borders were closed, and we just sort of just parked it. And then COVID dragged on another year. Then, of course, we could travel within Australia. And so the decision was made that His Majesty allowed his daughter, Her Royal Highness Princess Latufui Beka, to conduct the kava ceremony herself. And I had a choice of Canberra or Brisbane, but it was recommended Brisbane. And so that was conducted at the Royal Botanical Gardens in Brisbane City. And we brought all the different sort of local chiefs together. And so my understanding is there's only been two Americans who've got this role, and I'm the third in history and the first Australian to have this role. So it's a title created by His Majesty. So when he comes in September this year, it'll be the first time he's come in an official capacity since the title. I'll be the one sitting on the ground serving His Majesty the King and being the orator. So people will come and make presentations, and culturally in Tonga, the monarch doesn't speak directly to the people. I mean, they do at Parliament and other times, but they have chiefs who sit on the ground around the royals, and they speak on their behalf. And when I was in Tonga, since the installation, I went to Tonga, was invited to the royal kava ceremony. They had one in Tonga to install one of the nobles over there, and I was invited to be in that circle, which was a phenomenal experience to sit in that circle. And it's important to be there, because your name is called out. You know, take, you know, Ave Kava Kia Lavi Loola, the cover goes to Lavi Loola, and you fool and all that, and then, you know, it's a big deal. But being over there, I got the chance to actually serve the king. So I went around with the other talking chiefs who are based in Tonga. And I remember sitting at the opening of the Royal Archives at, there was a new building being opened as the Royal Archives building. The guest of honour was the king and the queen, and we're all sitting on the ground beside the king. And one of the matapule, or the chief sitting beside me, said, remember, Lavi Loola, we are the voice of the king. So when the dancers came out and started performing, we were the ones cheering, Marie, Marie Faramaite, you know, just praising the dancers. We were the voice of the king. And I was just like, I had goosebumps just thinking about it and participating in that. We were cheering, and whatever the king would be feeling we have to express it on his behalf.
Wow.
Phenomenal, yeah. It was just phenomenal. And just it's such an ancient thing that goes back centuries. And to be part of that in, you know, this modern age is really... And this is where our traditions are important, you know, and that they keep going on into the future.
Yeah. That moved me. Yeah. I don't know. I just pictured and visualized that whole scene, and I'm like, whoa, that is so beautiful.
You said when you first found out at the airport, was it Brisbane Airport they delivered the letter to you?
Yeah, near the airport.
Yeah, and you said you're just in silence, like you're in shock.
I don't know what to say.
Like, can you explain like what the honour means to you? How do you kind of describe the feeling?
I think number one, it's very rare to get an honour from the King, I think of any country, let alone His Majesty the King of Tonga. Number two, to know the significance of getting a title. There are titles in Tonga, and titles could be, you know, from nobles or their speaking chiefs, but from the King, very rare, very, very rare. So I knew how rare that was to happen. Number three is that it was, I guess, in a sense, an acknowledgement of service that I've already delivered in for the community. But the thing is that any title, it comes with responsibility. So there's a weight of responsibility that comes with that. So I took it and thought, wow, this is the King saying, acknowledging what you're doing, and I expect you to do this plus more into the future. And so I guess it was that weight of responsibility that was going on there, and just thinking, wow, what does this mean? This means a lot. This means a lot for my family, my wife. There are cultural responsibilities that will go with this, that will go for the rest of my life on earth, kind of thing. So yeah, it was just a lot to take in at one time, and I didn't see it coming, and it was unexpected.
When you were saying, like, in your story as well, that we are the King's voice, I instantly was like feeling like chills, and I'm like, oh my god, just you representing like someone, and then also representing a country, a nation as well, to be like, this is my nation's voice too. This is like, that's how I felt when I was thinking about it. I was like, wow, like just to walk in this life, and I'm like, I am my country's voice. I am this King's voice. And it was just really powerful. I was like, whoa, just the thought of that, where you feel a sense of pride or a sense of connection is with the ones that were all with you and around you next to each other, just to shout out, just to cheer on. And I'm like, wow.
And it's a steep learning curve. It's not something that you go get a manual and you just read up, I guess what I got to do is what I say. This is something that's it's learned, it's taught, it's observed. And since I've had the title, I've had the privilege of serving Her Royal Highness when she's come to Brisbane. And I guess in that service as well, I have another matapule, who's a matapule for her in Brisbane, and he's been like a mentor to me. But you're always learning on the fly. No one's going to say, we're going to do this, this, and this, and you do that. It's not like that. It's all just as it's happening in real time and all that. And then they'll just point to you, you're on. You've got to say something. You've just got to be prepared.
Wow.
And that's why I say it's a steep learning curve. But at the same time, there's so much honour that goes with it. And it's an honour to serve. It's an honour to serve. And whilst in the community, we sit on chairs and that, but you as a matapule, you're on the ground. You're cross-legged on the ground. The King or the Royal is on the chair. And so you really go right down to grassroots to serve.
At Paya, we're all about equipping and empowering young people to, you know, achieve their God-given potential and empowering them to be positive role models in their communities. What's your message to young people in the Pacific and in Australia who, you know, who we want to empower to achieve their full potential? What do you see in young people today that you could give them a word of encouragement, that you could really, you know, encourage them to step forward and be a leader in their community and give back? What's kind of your thoughts around that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And I think there's been a generational shift in modern times compared to, when I say modern times, like I was born in a different age in the time of Noah, but like growing up, I felt that our youth were very much seen but not heard. But I feel that confidence, there's a bit of a shift now, and I think that's maybe through technology, maybe just through the change of times and so forth. But I definitely want to encourage our youth out there to step out of where you are. You may not be able to change the physical surroundings around you, but you can be an impact and an influence. So you can come into a room and you can have dominion over that room. You know, when like Princess Mary walks into a room or something, even the King of Tonga walks into a room, it's just, there's an aura. There's a command, there's a confidence that we can carry. And I think for our people to step up and be confident in who you are. If you're confident in who you are as an individual, and whatever that means for you, whether it's in terms of your faith or understanding your culture or just knowing who you are, and so whatever it is for you or your career or your path or whatever it is, you know, do that to the best of your ability. Step into a room, command the presence of the room, and be the best that you can be. Look at opportunities where you can solicit transformation. I think we can't change things, but you can transform things.
Right.
You can transform the room around you. Mm. You can be an influencer. We say social influencers. You can be an influencer. It's just finding ways to do that. So for myself personally, for me, that's really important to me is, you know, I would say God, King and Country, but, you know, so God, my relationship with God, number one. My relationship with my family is very important as well. And my connection to, you know, to the King and to Country is really, really important. If those three are all in order for me personally, that enables me to be able to carry myself with confidence into just about any setting that I go into. At the end of the day, I believe that we're here to serve in whatever capacity that is. So if you're a young person out there and it might be doing a travel blog, or it might be writing, or it might be you might be someone studying medicine or health, working in the health area, or whatever it might be, do that to the best of your ability and solicit transformation into the community that you serve. At the end of the day, life is very, very short. And we have this short window that God has given us to do something amazing and leave a legacy. And then the next generation will take that further. We're just handing on the baton, right?
Yeah.
So what you guys are doing with Paya is a great example of that. I don't think anything like this existed before. A connected youth organization, not just Australia or based in one location, but actually across a region. I don't think that's ever been done before. Maybe on the adults level with Pacific Islands Forum and that, but not at a youth level. And so what you've done is the youth that were sitting in, maybe sitting quite quietly in each respective country, now have a platform to share those viewpoints. And I'm sure there'll be adults and leaders in the region who'll be watching and listening and watching your work and already watching the work you're doing. Oh, this is what the youth are thinking. Have we turned our mind to this? Or have they got new ideas that we can engage to connect and to be transformative in terms of our community and being future now thinkers? If we just travel around the world and all that, there's so much going on out there with our younger people, and I think we need to harness that and use it as a utility to take our people forward. It's a hard journey, right? You know, I know Papua New Guinea is a great business case there. I've talked to a lot of young Papua New Guineans studying at like ANU in Canberra, and they've said, oh, you know, you've got very remote areas of Papua New Guinea that don't have the infrastructure, and the power brokers are based in the government in, say, Port Moresby and that kind of thing, you know. But that's the challenge. There's the opportunity there. How can we overcome that in this? You know, we've got technology. How can we move this forward so that we can break down those barriers and ensure that the whole country moves together?
That's it. That was great. That was great advice. I think I'm just reflecting back to your 13-year-old self and how you have just brought yourself to where you are today, just from your own self saying, like, coming into a room and having confidence in yourself, and you at 13 having confidence in yourself that you were going to prove someone wrong, to be able to learn these languages, to be able to come here and be serving the Royal Highness, the family, like, this is still amazing. And then you having the capacity that you have right now is still such an inspiration for us young people, that we get to look at this just from the way that you've shared with us. Every word that you've said here is actually very, very, very important for us that we are carrying on and watching.
And having thick skin.
Having thick skin.
I think a lot, when people criticize us, or people say things to us, or say, you know, who are you? Who do you think you are, young person? You know, standing up and saying something kind of thing. You can take that as an offense, and you can step back and be, you know, go under the table and hide. Or you can just look at an opportunity and say, no, this is an opportunity.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity, but how can I navigate this space to achieve what I'm wanting to achieve, but do it in a way that's still culturally respectful and still honoring our older people? And sometimes it might require us planting the seed of an idea in an older person's mind or a leader's mind, and then they'll take it as their idea and they'll start it off, and you can look back and go, oh, I didn't get credit for that. Was that what the point is, or is the point to get that idea across the line, right? So we just need to be creative in how we get things and move the waka forward.
I like what you said it's not necessarily about changing it, but it's about transforming it. So I think if we young people, we think of it as that, we don't have to go in and completely change everything at once. Little by little we transform. I think that's really practical advice that we can take on. And it's a new way of thinking of it. We talk about change a lot. Change is scary, you know. Change is big, and change happens incrementally. So I like how you've encouraged us to think about how we can take the presence of the room, command the presence of the room, and transform. I think that's really going to unlock something in us to think of it like that going forward.
And knowing your sphere of influence, I think that's important as well, where you have influence, or the people who have influence, yes. kind of thing. I think that's something that I've learned over the years. If I wanted to get something over the line, who are the key movers and shakers? And may not be me. But I've got to connect to the person that can connect to that person to see that transformation take place. And so, again, knowing who you're, and your influence, your circle of influence, and your sphere of influence can increase over time, yeah. kind of thing. So, you know, like now people are coming, I never thought people were coming to me trying to get things over the line. I'm like, wow, I used to go to these yeah. people. But now as time goes on, you get older and you move into that, and you just need to understand that this is your time, this is your season.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great Bible verse in Esther chapter 4, and it says, who knows whether you are brought to the kingdom for such a time as this?
Yeah.
And there was Esther doing her thing. And then all of a sudden, you're needed on a national scale to bring about, you know, a big, massive transformation of the mindset of the king and those around him. So I think that's the same for us as well. Keep plugging away, keep chipping at it, keep being influential, and boom, you come into your season, and then something major is going to happen, and you'll leave a legacy like nothing else.
Yeah, like being the king's voice.
Yeah, who would have thought? Never would have seen that coming. Yeah, mm.
That's
wow. Cool. Any final questions?
I am inspired. Thank you for passing the baton on, as you were saying.
Over to you now. Over to you guys.
Lovely.
The great thing about Pacifica TV and Radio, there's a lot of young people that come in and use the studio and
yes.
share their voice on the Pacifica TV and Radio platform. So
yeah,
we're just very humble and grateful to be welcomed here by Sully and his team.
Yeah.
And what a blessing, you know, to have such an amazing studio, this equipment, this technology.
Yes.
We're a small organization, we're a grassroots organization, so it's great to tap into the wider Pacifica network and draw on each other's resources and collaborate,
yeah.
Promote what you're doing on our platform, and we're able to utilize your studio and make the most of this
yeah.
beautiful venue. So yeah, it's just a real privilege and honour. Sully, he is, you know, if you're a young person from the Pacific, or if you're an Australian who's, you know, wanting to volunteer and give back to the Pacific, he is such a role model for us. I think we've only scratched the surface today. There's so many other...
yeah.
It's always much to tell more about, is there not?
We could talk about, but...
but it does seem right that
sets
we...
sets the tone for
yeah.
our podcast. You know,
yeah.
we wanted to start this first episode with a leader such as Sully coming into the room and sharing his advice and wisdom.
Yeah.
And we hope that, you know, this is just the first of many conversations that will encourage you as PIA members, or whether you're not even a young person who's watching this, we don't know. This is, you know, anyone can listen into our podcast, but we hope that you've taken something away from the conversation. And Sully, I might just pass over to you just to close and
yeah, sure.
final remarks.
Look, thank you so much for this opportunity. I just first and foremost just want to really acknowledge the great work of PIA. I've had the privilege of meeting with the PIA team and the different members, both Australian-based and a few from overseas, over the last few years. So inspired by some of these, particularly like the youth conferences that you guys have had in, I think, New Caledonia, Tonga, Nauru. Phenomenal. And for me, it's the connection back to youth in the Pacific, not just our diaspora. I've spent most of my work's been in the diaspora space, but to see how you guys are connecting to our young people in the islands who are dealing with issues, you know, a whole range of issues. I mean, climate change would be just one of the many, but I know there's a lot there, a lot of different issues going on, political, getting women into the leadership roles, getting young people into parliament and all this sort of thing. There's a whole range of stuff going on, but it starts with a leadership platform like this where people can step into this space, learn, garner knowledge, garner experience, network with other people. And I think about when I think of your youth conference, I think, I wonder how many young men and women that have been at your youth conference and met each other, made that network, that one day might be future prime ministers or ministers yeah. of parliament in their country. And again, by doing so, being agents of transformation
yes.
in their nations and their network. And it all started with being in PIA, you know, way back. So never underestimate humble beginnings because God can use those humble beginnings for, you know, phenomenal outcomes down the line. And it all starts here. But I want to just commend you for the work you're doing. Thank you for coming on board Pacifica TV and Radio. And I hope that through the media platform that there will be a brighter light shined on the amazing work that you're doing. There's so much work that goes on in organisations like PIA that's often in some ways invisible. It's unseen. It's very discreet. It's behind the scenes. But I hope through this platform it just brings a real light on the work you're doing and encourages more people to jump on board and get involved with the Pacific Australia Youth Association. Thank you for having me on your inaugural podcast today. Very, very honored. A big malo au pito, me taki ma'ata, fafetai lava. Thank you, true, and mercy, and thank you very, very much.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you.